Welcome to Practical Christian Living.
Strongholds are hard to overcome. Sinful strongholds are hard to overcome. They really, really, really and truly are. Otherwise, they would be called weak holds. And if you said, I'm struggling with a weak hold, I would say, you got problems. But strongholds are difficult. And strongholds need often a progression. You're not going to lick this thing in one moment. I wish you would.
How do you control sin? We all sin, right? We are born with a sin nature. But if we have a stronghold, a sin that takes control, takes over, and continuously brings destruction into our lives, don't worry. There is hope, and there is victory possible with Jesus. Paul knew sin would be such a battle for many of us, which is just one reason we are so grateful and so blessed by the book of Romans. With Romans 6, 15 through 23, here's Robert Furrow, pastor of Calvary, Tucson.
So today we're going to talk about not letting sin run amok in your body, in your life. Paul has been talking about sin since we started the book of Romans. I don't know if you noticed that or not. But chapter 1, he brings in sin. He talks about sin all the way through. And when he gets to chapter 5, he says something that is pretty astounding, pretty astonishing. He says, where sin abounds, grace abounds even more. And what an incredible promise that is, that where sin abounds, grace abounds even more. We think of some of the people in the Old Testament that struggled, somebody like Samson. I don't know if you know this about Samson, but the guy had a bunch of trouble. The guy couldn't stay away from the Philistine girls. Told his mom and dad, I want you to go get this girl from Timnah. They said, find a good Jewish girl. And he said, I want the one from Timnah. So they went and they got him the one from Timnah. He ended up divorcing her, and then he meets Delilah. And Delilah, talk about a toxic relationship. Samson and Delilah's relationship is toxic. Samson was called by God. Samson was empowered by God. Samson had the gift of the Holy Spirit that was given to him, and yet he had these struggles in his life, and he's in heaven, but he had all kinds of trouble and problems because he let sin run amok in his life. And so Paul doesn't want that for you. Yes, where your sin abounds, grace abounds even more. That is true now. It will be true next week. It will be true with struggles and sinful things that you are involved in the future. They are not going to keep you out of heaven. God's grace will abound over the sin that you may have. And when sin abounds, grace abounds even more. So then he asks this question in verse 1 of chapter 16. This is right after that statement. He says, what shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace might abound? Well, if God's grace abounds when I sin, well then, why not sin? God's grace is there to cover me. I'm going to make it into heaven. So why wouldn't I just sin? I'm going to get more of God's grace if I just go ahead and do it. And so you have some habitual sin in your life, and because God's grace is there, you know you're going to heaven. You're okay with having that in your life. Now, before we talk about why you shouldn't do that, because that, and let's not lose that. We're talking about why we don't just go and go sin crazy. That's what we're talking about today, because there's bad things that are happening. Let's just kind of review what we've talked about sin the last few weeks. First of all, sin, just sin in general, is sin because it is inherently sin. I realize that's not a very profound statement, but it does speak the truth. There's something inherent about sin that makes it bad. It's not bad just because God chose to make it bad. That's something else called transgression. Transgression is sin, but it only becomes sin because a rule has been made. For example, we have a rule, and this is going to get some of you guys here now. We have a rule that you can't bring coffee into our sanctuary. Some of you guys need to. Go ahead and move that now. Now, the reason we have that rule is because we have found giant coffee stains underneath seats. And we would like to be, you know, frugal, not cheap, but frugal, and not have to replace this carpet before we have to replace it, because it's going to be a lot of money when we have to do it. So we've said to just bring water in and don't bring coffee in. Now, there's nothing inherently wrong with bringing coffee into our sanctuary, right? If you steal from somebody, there's something inherently wrong with that. If you bring coffee into the sanctuary, nothing inherently wrong with that. Except that we made a rule. And when you brought it in, you did it like this. So that no one would see it. And so, yes, it would be a sin, but it's a transgression because it's something that's not inherently wrong that a rule has been made about. And we want to make as few of those kind of rules in our lives. We don't want to make vows that put ourselves into a position where we're going to be transgressing something that isn't inherently wrong, but that we can, but we've made a rule in our lives that we can't do that thing, which is not inherently wrong. Okay? Secondly, we take a huge step forward to fight against this sin that is sin because it's destructive, because it brings death, because we're so easily ensnared by it, because it makes us like Samson, who gets captured by the Philistines, who's chained to a millstone and treated like an oxen. They take his strength and they use him like an ox to grind up what a grain, and his eyes are burned out. They heat up a hot poker and they burn out his eyes, so he's blind when they're doing that. How does this man that has such potential, the Spirit of God, chosen by God, called by God, get to that state? And he's in heaven. He's in the hall of faith, so he made it to heaven. But God would say, I would spare you that. I'm not saying that's going to happen to you. I'm not going to say you're chained to a millstone with your eyeballs burned out, so stop sinning. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying those kind of bad things happen when we do these inherently bad things, because built in them is a cause and effect. We do these things and these things happen in our lives, and God's grace, which forgives us and abounds and brings us into heaven, doesn't stop the cause and effect. That's what Paul says when he says, certainly not. We are not to continue to sin, because it's not only about making it into heaven. It's about not having the destruction in our life that we have when sin runs amok. And so if you are struggling with a stronghold, if you are struggling, and strongholds are hard to overcome. Sinful strongholds are hard to overcome. They really, really, really and truly are. Otherwise, they would be called weak holds. And if you said, I'm struggling with a weak hold, I would say, you got problems. But strongholds are difficult. And strongholds need often a progression. You're not going to lick this thing in one moment. I wish you would. I wish the moment that we were born again, we popped a halo and we were perfect. I don't struggle with any strongholds again. Check out my halo. It's pretty good looking. And I don't struggle with sin anymore. No, we have strongholds and we need to make progress on it. And sometimes we get frustrated because we don't make the progress we want to make. And I understand that you want to get rid of it and you want it out of your life, but getting better in it is good. And I'm not talking about severe sin. That's a whole other category. You know, murder, rape, adultery, those are severe sins. Those are a whole other thing. We're talking about something totally different. But we're talking about a stronghold that's in your life, and you need to make progression. You need to be getting better at it. You need to be getting it worked out of your life. And you will have victory, and we'll talk about how that can happen here. But that's what Paul is talking about, getting rid of the destructive nature of sin, because we don't do it. If we do it, we're going to have that. One of the first steps that we take in fighting against sin, this is the biggest step you take. It's the very first step to take. If you are here today and you say, I don't want to be Samson. I don't want to even be a mini Samson, that not so much bad stuff happens to me like him, but still bad stuff happens. I want to get sin out of my life so those bad things don't happen. One of the first things that you do is to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, which means you obey him, you listen to him, you want to please him, you're loving him, and you love your neighbor as yourself. That means you're putting people around you above you, as it says in Philippians chapter 2. Put other people's interest above your own interest. But in our flesh, and when I use the term our flesh, I just mean our body drives, what we naturally would do within our flesh. In our flesh, we're out for us. That's why when someone turns on their turn signal, we speed up. What does it hurt that they get in front of you? You're not going to get in front of me. Because we're just thinking about me. It's all about me. I have an eye disease. I want what I can get for me. That's my eye disease. When we begin to live for other people, when we begin to drive in love, which is good practice, by the way, really loving the people that are out there, letting them in, not getting too close behind them. When they pull out in front of you, give them grace. You know, there's a lot of good applications we could use there. When we live in love towards the people around us, we then fulfill, Jesus said, the law and the prophets. When we put other people's interests above our own, see, the way that we live generally is we go into a movie theater, we want the best seats for us. We're going to go kayaking and we see a new kayak. I'm grabbing that new kayak. Ooh, I got a new one that I'm riding on. At the end of the day, what did having the new kayak compared to the used kayak help do for you at all? What did you gain from that? But you are pulled to that new kayak. Instead of saying, hey, why don't you go and take this one to someone else, someone random. Hey, look, there's a new one. Take it. They would be shocked. They would fall over. But that's the way that God wants us to live. And when we live that way towards our kids and towards our family and towards our employees and towards our coworkers and towards our acquaintances, then God's love is revealed around us and we get rid of so much sin. It's like one giant step that you take to get rid of a bunch of sin in your life when you say, I will be a man of God who walks in love. Love covers a multitude of sins. If your motive is love and you do something wrong, it's covered because it was love. And it will always end up being good if the motive is really love in your life. And when you're in a complicated situation and you say, what would love do here? If I'm going to walk in love and be the loving person, what does it tell me to do? You can walk in love toward your ex. Ooh, why'd you bring that up? Shouldn't have brought that up. You can walk in love towards your ex without ever being restored, but you can walk in love towards them. And it would show the love of Christ, and you would avoid so many internal things that go on inside of you that end up bringing some kind of destruction. All right, so let's talk about what Paul says now. All right, so our first step to overcoming sin always is to be men and women that are committed to love, loving God and loving each other. And then Paul says in verse 15, he repeats this question, what shall we say then? Because we are not under the law, but under grace. Excuse me, let me read what it actually says. Let me do that. Here's the funny thing. My wife says to me, you're making a lot of mistakes when you're reading. How come you're doing that? And I was like, because I can't see the print. So we got the biggest Bible we could get. Look at that thing. It's like the size of a house. And look at the print. And you know why I do that? Because I don't want to do this. All right, here we go. This is what it says. It's vanity on my part. I don't want to read readers when I'm doing it. So if I keep making mistakes, the readers are coming out. All right. So verse 15. What then shall we sin because we are not under the law, but under grace? Certainly not. Paul is making the same argument he made in verse 1. Should we sin because of grace? Certainly not. But I want to note, and this is quickly, that he does say we are not under the law. I want to note that because there are people today that want to put you under the law. And they make their way into Calvary Chapel. They want to tell you that you have to obey a certain set of laws from the Old Testament that they've chosen. When the Bible says, if you're under the law and you break one of them, you've broken them all. They want to lay on you trips. Highlight this, underline it, and you can show it to them. We are not under the law. Should we sin because we're not under the law? We're not under the law. And don't let anybody lay burdens on you that you would have to carry. You are, of all people, what does the Bible say? The most free. We don't have a bunch of transgression kind of sins. God hasn't given us a bunch of little rules that don't have inherently bad stuff in it. God just says, stay away from the inherently bad stuff. God hasn't made a bunch of rules for us. We want to make rules. We want to make it harder for people to live for Christ. Don't ever do that. I'm kind of like a doctor. Doctor says, first of all, do no harm. My statement is a little bit different. First of all, I don't want to lay any more trips on you, man. Thought I'd throw in a man there because it sounded like the 70s. I don't want to lay any more trips on you, man. I want you to be free. I want you to be free to do things that are good. I want you to be free to use the freedom that you have for Christ. I don't want to bound you up and as a pastor lay all these burdens and I'll say it again, these trips on you that are not biblical at all, but are something that's made up by me. And don't let anybody do it. Don't let anybody put you under the law. Don't let anybody say to you, you need to keep the law. The Old Testament hasn't been done away with. You're right. It hasn't been done away with. It's been fulfilled in Jesus. So now we are not under it, not because it was bad, not because it was done away with, but because it was finished. The book of the law was done. Jesus closed the last page of it, and I am free to have a ham sandwich. Praise the Lord. And you will not take that away from me. I will not let you do it. I am free in so many ways. Now, there's nothing extra for that. It's not on the topic at all. We'll talk about this in a message one time where it's the main topic. But I just wanted to point this out to you because I hear it every so often. People here at the church, that there's people circulating around trying to get people under the law. Don't listen to them. And if you're that person doing it, stop it. What are you, a bunch of Pharisees? You're like the Pharisees Jesus fought against. Running around laying trips on people. What are you doing? Instead, there's enough here that's inherently bad that needs to be corrected. Use your energy on that. Instead of laying people under more burdens. All right, I'm done. I'm really done. All right, let's move on. Verse 16, do you not know that to whom you present yourselves slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether sin leading to death or whether obedience leading to righteousness? The first reason he says that you should not let sin run amok in your body, my words, that you should not let sin run amok is because you'll become a slave to it. The thing about sin is it is deceptive and it gets out of control easy. You think you have it under control. You have that little thing going on, flirting with a gal at work. It's just flirting. It's never going to go any farther than that. But sin gets out of control fast. And the sting of temptation is opportunity. And by flirting with that girl, you're setting up opportunity. And you don't know what that sting of temptation will be when that temptation comes. But you would have never have had that sting of temptation had you not begun to think you had it under control. You think you've got your little sin, your little pet sin that you keep in your life. It's a secret sin. No one else knows about it. And when no one else is looking, you take that little yapper out of the cage and you put it on a leash and you walk it around. You let it do its business and you bring it back and you put it back in and you're like, how am I ever going to get hurt by that? Look at the thing. I'm not going to get hurt by that. That's not going to hurt me. But what you don't know is it is an animal that is not leash trained. Guys ever had a dog that's not leash trained? We went to the, got a dog from the Humane Society. It was an Irish setter. I might not need to say anything else from that. For those of you who have had Irish setters, 3 years old, was not leash trained. I literally got knocked down by that dog because he wasn't leash trained. The dog went in circles around you, through your legs. So the leash is all around, and then I literally fell down and the dog tried to drag me. I think Jessica was 9 at the time. I saw her trying to walk him. He's running around her, and I saw her go down, and he actually did drag her. Had trouble dragging me, but he drug her. That's what sin is. We're like, I got my little yapper. Let's let him out and get him. It's like, oh, oh. Doesn't Hebrews say, put away the weights that slow you down? Talking about an endurance race in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Put away the weights that slow you down. See, there are going to be things in your life that aren't sin, but they're slowing you down from running a good, swift race. And then it says, and the sin which so easily ensnares you. You think you've got it under control. You're deceived by sin. You think it's not going to ensnare you, and yet it does. So Paul says the first thing is that sin turns into slavery. Yes, we have grace that abounds over sin. Where sin abounds, grace abounds even more. But do you want to be a slave to sin? Do you want slave ruling over you? Do you want to be at the beck and call of sin because you haven't been willing to fight against it and it's become a stronghold in your life? And that's the first reason why we need to fight against it, even though God's grace is tremendous, because we don't want to be a slave to sin. And look at what he goes on to say here about this. He says, do you not know that to whom you present yourself slaves to obey, you are that one slave whom you obey, whether sin leading to death or obedience leading to righteousness? The end result of sin is death. Well, we understand that. Adam sinned and we died. That's why I said a few weeks ago, when we get to heaven, let's get him. Because I probably would have made the same choice, but at least I would have liked to have made it. How about you? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you have liked to have made the choice yourself? Probably made the same choice, but Adam made it for us. So there's a very real way in which we are affected by death. We are dying. We're getting older and we are dying, and that's because of sin. Your personal sin might kill you. It's not always going to kill you, but it might. The Bible says don't be drunk with wine, which is dissipation, just meaning you make bad decisions. One of the bad decisions that you make when you're drunk, I'm okay to drive. I can drive okay. And so you drive that car and you kill yourself and maybe someone else. And your sin literally led to death. Not so much anymore, but back in the 80s, I used to use AIDS as an example of that. You have an extramarital affair and you catch AIDS. And your sin, God would have spared you from that. You still catch AIDS today, it's just manageable. It's not fun by any means, it's just manageable. Back then, you died from it. And so you live that way and God would spare you, but the end result is death. There's other sins, I bring addiction to opioids in with the whole drunk thing. You're doing it to get high, you're doing it to If you're chasing it, you're doing it to feel that high that you don't feel anymore when you're taking a certain amount. So you end up taking more and more. You're back on whatever, heroin or whatever, and now you've taken too much, or you didn't know what you were taking, and you OD. And that's happening all over the place, right? The opioid epidemic is out of control because people are buying these things on the street and they don't know what's in them, and they're taking too much and they're dying. Fentanyl is just killing people right and left. And so God would say, don't seek that high. Don't be drunk. Don't seek that high. It can lead to death. But there's more than just death. You could have the death of a marriage. You could have the death of respect of your children. You could have the death of an influence that you would have in the lives of people. I want sin out of my life because I don't want the death of my marriage. I don't want my children to not respect me anymore. I don't want to lose what I have here in being able to come and speak into your lives. And I would be foolish and deceptive if I thought I could harbor sin and not have it affect me. That's what Paul is saying. He's saying sin leads to death and obedience leads to righteousness. So with every temptation, you have two choices. One of them is to give in to that sin. It's not always going to lead to death. God's grace is there, but there is a cause and effect that is not covered by grace. And that cause and effect that's not covered by grace might bring in destruction that you're not willing to accept. Sometimes the destruction, you might go away and go, oh, I'm good with that. But sooner or later, it's going to be more than you can take. It certainly was for Samson. If only he could have been told earlier. But do you think if you could have told Samson, listen, Samson, you keep on messing around with these Philistine gals, they're going to burn out your eyes with a hot poker. They're going to chain you to a millstone. Do you think Samson would have changed his behavior? No, I don't think so. I think this is what Samson would have said. Well, thanks for the warning. I'll watch out for that. I got this handled. Now, where's that gal from Timnah? Right? Because that's what sin does. We go, it's not going to bring destruction. It's not going to destroy me. Flirting with this gal is not going to destroy my marriage. It's not going to bring death to my marriage. But you're not in control. It entangles you. And that's why you go, you know what? I'm going to keep a proper relationship with all of the women in my life. I'm not going to let them cross those boundaries at all. The relationships just stay on a brother and sister kind of way, and that's it. Because once you go down that road, you don't know where your control is. You don't know when you get out of control. You don't know when that sting of temptation hits. And I said, the sting of temptation is opportunity. You would never have that opportunity had you never been flirting with that person. The opportunity would have never arisen. And now there's a destruction of a marriage or maybe the respect of your children. How could you ever do that to mom? And your children will never respect you again. You've lost more than you ever thought you would. And that's why Paul says, don't do it. Be obedience that leads to life instead of sin that leads to death. He goes on. There's a lot more to say about it. He says, for that form of doctrine to which you were delivered. Verse 17, but God be thanked that though you were slaves to sin, yet you obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which you were delivered. He says, thanks be to God that you got saved. Paul was not the one who planted the church in Rome. He's writing to Roman Christians now. He's not the one that brought the church there, but they were delivered the doctrine. He says, thanks be to God you were delivered. He says, and having been set free from sin, you have become slaves to righteousness. That's a great way to think about it. You are now a slave to righteousness because as you sow seeds, righteousness comes from it.
We hope you've been blessed, encouraged, and edified by what you've heard here on Practical Christian Living, a ministry of Calvary Chapel here in Tucson, Arizona. If you'd like to hear more of Robert Furrow's teachings, visit calvarytucson.com, where you'll find recordings of weekly services at Calvary Tucson and also archives of Practical Christian Living programs. We are grateful for your donations that help fund the production and broadcast for Practical Christian Living. If this ministry has blessed you and you'd like to support it with your financial gift of any amount, please mail your donation to Calvary Tucson, PCL Radio, 5170 South Julian Drive, that's J-U-L-I-A-N, Tucson, Arizona, 85706. If you live in the Tucson area or you're ever visiting our community, we'd love for you to stop by one of our two campuses in East and Southwest Tucson. You can find service times online at calvarytucson.com. We'd love to have you visit for Bible study. Drop into our Solid Ground coffee shop and bookstore, or take a minute to look through our Mission Thrift Store located at our West Campus, which benefits our various missions projects. Have you accepted Jesus into your life or have questions about salvation? Email us at saved@calvarytucson.com. That's S-A-V-E-D at calvarytucson.com. And don't forget to follow us on social media, Instagram at Calvary Tucson or Facebook at Calvary Chapel Tucson. And we want to remind our local listeners that you can watch Practical Christian Living Sunday mornings at 8:30 on KGUN9. May you walk in the grace and peace of Jesus today.